Noyes, Ray Sabula, and our friend Nicole Sudo from the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities. And today's session is going to be an overview of the plan for achieving self-support. And before I introduce Nicole to you and let her say a few words to you, I want to take you through what I call our logistical slides. And so I want you to just, you know, look at the slide that's up now, and you'll notice that there's two ways to listen to this webinar. One can either listen to it through a telephone or through the mic and speakers on the computer. And if you decide to listen to it through the telephone, you've got to go to the control panel, which is on the right-hand side of your computer right now, and go to the audio icon, and then click on the use telephone, and up will pop up a dial-in number, an access code, and an audio pin, all special just for this webinar. And then you do that, and voila, you will be able to listen to Nicole, to Ray, and myself during the session that way. As you know, since this is our fourth out of six in the webinar series for the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, we really welcome questions. We always truly welcome questions. And there is a very easy way for you to jot down questions. Once again, you go to the control panel on the right-hand side, and you go to the questions icon, and you click on the questions icon, and then you can type in a question, and then click on send, and it will pop up, and Ray will be looking at the questions when I am talking, and I will be looking at the questions when Ray is talking. So we'll bring them up. Also, I want to remind you that we are going to be doing some polling questions, four of them today, and they're always set up for one of two reasons. Either to see whether what we explained was clear enough and most people got it, or, and if they didn't, to make sure that we review it again in a slightly different way, or to see how much people know before we cover a topic. So they're very important, and again, I'm going to encourage each and every one of you, when I say there's a polling question up, answer it so we get a really good sense of what's going on. People have been doing a wonderful job on these webinars. I think we're building up some momentum here, and it's really a pleasure to be on. And having said that, at this point, I would like to introduce you to Nicole Sudo, the great doyen, who from the Office of People with Mental Disabilities, to do a welcome for you all. Nicole.
Thanks, Ed. Hi, I'm Nicole Sudo, and I work with Supported Employment Programs here at the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities. I'd like to welcome you to the Benefits and Planning and Work Incentives webinar series that we're presenting for you today. This is the fourth, as Ed mentioned, in our series, and we hope that you've been enjoying the topic so far. Today's overview will be of the plan for achieving self-support path.
And now try to do that five times fast.
Actually, of all the ones, it's kind of a simple one, so I don't know why I botched it, but it's the Plan for Achieving Self-Support, or PASS. And this is a powerful work incentive for people who want to work, because PASS plans allow individuals with disabilities to purchase items or services that they need to support their ability to achieve their work goals. So anything that you can think of that you might need to help you work, and I want to mention transportation is one of those hot ticket items, because I know that's something that everybody struggles with. PASS can help you with those things. So hopefully you'll learn from this webinar and go out and use these tools that you learn about today. I wanted to mention that our commissioner is a strong supporter of employment and has made it a top priority of our agency. So Commissioner Burke has set a goal of doubling the number of individuals with disabilities who are employed in their communities. And we hope that this webinar series will give people the tools to achieve those goals. So for people who are receiving public benefits like Medicaid and Social Security, understanding how work impacts those benefits is extremely important, and that's why we're presenting this information. It's a building block of informed choice and person-centered planning. So if you're an individual with a disability, we hope that you are able to take this information and use it to improve your ability to work. And if you're someone that's helping to support people with disabilities to achieve their work goals, we hope that you'll take this information and really go out there and spread the word that these tools are incredible and that they can really help people save more money for themselves and still attain that work goal and maintain their benefits so they can get the other supports and services they need. I'm going to mention one last thing before I turn it back over. If anyone after hearing this presentation needs help creating a PASS plan, I encourage you to reach out to the New York Makes Work Pay hotline. It's at 1-888-224-3272, or you can go to newyorkmakesworkpay.org right online and find how to get connected to this hotline. They're very experienced in how to do this, so if you think this is a great idea but you're not sure how to get started, I encourage you to reach out and get help with that, because it's really a great incentive to be able to use. So with that said, our presenters for this series are Ed Lopez and Ray Sabula from Cornell's Employment and Disability Institute. Those of you who've attended our past sessions know that Ed and Ray are great presenters. They have a lot of enthusiasm, and we have fun during these presentations. So I hope that you find today's presentation informative and helpful. Ed and Ray, back
great.
To you.
Terrific. Well, Nicole, as always, a wonderful, wonderful introduction. And let me tell you that Nicole mentions the hotline for the New York Makes Work Pay program. And one of the individuals who persons the hotline is Jessica Abbott. And Jessica Abbott has done more plans for achieving self-supports in New York State than anybody else in the last 8 years. She's terrific. And so if you call, she will be the person who will be contacting you back, and she will help you and guide you through the process. But having said that, what we need to find out now is exactly what a plan for achieving self-support is. And I've put up the first slide, and you will notice that a plan for achieving self-support is an SSI work incentive. And it's very important that everybody understand that. It is an SSI work incentive. If an individual receives only SSDI, Social Security Disability Insurance benefits, they will not be eligible for a plan for achieving self-support. It is an SSI work incentive. I will tell you in a few minutes how a person could become eligible for SSI if they are on SSDI, so that they can actually have a plan for achieving self-support. But before I do that, let me go back and let you know that with a plan for achieving self-support, an individual can set aside income. It could be earned, it could be unearned, it could be deemed income from a family member, it could be in-kind income that's being counted against them, or it could be resources to be used to achieve a specific work goal. And then let me take you right back there by what it says. It says unearned. You notice that? You can set aside unearned income. Well, if a person is on Social Security disability benefits and they're getting $800 a month, they could set aside the Social Security money. That's unearned income. And since they have already been found eligible for benefits, if they are resource eligible, that money would not count. And that's how you would set somebody up for SSI and then for a plan to achieve self-support. Because that money that they've set aside is the money that's going to be in the PASS to help a person achieve their work goal. And a PASS can be established for a myriad of reasons. It can be established to cover the cost of obtaining an education, to receive vocational training towards a specific work goal down the road, to start a small business, or to purchase support services. So you can notice that a plan for achieving self-support can be incredibly, and I mean incredibly, flexible. You can use it for something major like going to college, or you can use it for something as small as starting a dog walking business. The whole idea behind the class is to help someone become more self-sufficient. More self-sufficient. And my friends, before we go on to the second question, I'm going to take you to our first polling question. And I'm going to launch the poll. And this one is a nice and easy one. A pass is an SSDI work incentive. True or false? That's what we're looking for right now. True or false? And this question, of course, is there to make sure that there's no confusion about what a pass is right from the start. And in 20 seconds, Ray, we've already got 80% of the folks on the phone voting. And that's great. And not only are they voting, Ray, but we're almost unanimous.
Ed, you keep talking, Ed.
See, it's what does it. Ray, next time.
You're not supposed to say it.
The next time I begin to use the word unanimous, I want you to come over and just smack me right across the side of my head here.
It will be my pleasure.
And don't I know it. Don't I know it. Well, look, we've almost gone for a minute. We've got about 90% of the vote in. And I am going to close the poll. And I'm going to share the results. And the results show that 94% of you said, no, it's not an SSDI work incentive. And that is correct, because remember what I keep telling you, it is an SSI work incentive. SSI work incentive. You have to be eligible for SSI in order to be able to use a plan for achieving self-support. So I'm going to hide the results. And I'm going to go on to the second slide. And you'll notice, again, as a summary, the pass is a special SSI rule for not counting income or resources that support a work goal. Now think about what that means. When you're not counting either income or resources to support a work goal, that's the equivalent of having the government give you some additional free money. Because that money that they were counting as having been available to you is now in a special bank account. And it's as if it wasn't there. And you can now get SSI. And this is what it's all about. If approved, what can the pass result in? Well, for some people, it could result in keeping their SSI eligibility. Let's assume that they're making enough money so that, you know how it works for SSI. We covered this a month ago, 20, 65, and half the remainder, right? That's how you take away and count budget SSI's earned income rule, right? That's how it works. 20, 65, half the remainder. Well, if after the 20, 65, and half the remainder, there was no money left over because you're earning too much money, there'd be no SSI. But if you took some of that money that was being counted against you and put it into a pass to achieve a specific work goal, you would still get an SSI check. So that's a great way of doing it. And in some cases, it might be a larger SSI check. So you go from either no check to some check, or a small check to a larger check. But it's the third bullet that I want to cover in a little bit more detail. And that's when you've got SSI eligibility when none existed before. And this is the example that I started talking about a few minutes ago in the first slide. I mentioned to you that there might be an individual, and we'll call him Ray, who's on SSDI benefits. And Ray is getting $820 in SSDI benefits. With $820, Ray Sabula will be ineligible for any SSI because he's entitled to a whopping $20 unearned income disregard. And when you take 20 from 820, that leaves $800. And as we go through this, let me just take to the next slide. You'll notice that if he lives alone, the SSI rate is $785. And if he's got $800, he's going to be above the SSI rate. He will get no SSI because of his unearned income. Lo and behold, if we took that $800 and we actually put it into a plan for achieving self-support for Ray, because he's got a specific work goal, he wants to go back to college, to become a teacher's aide, or to become a teacher, or to become a lawyer down the road, that $800 is no longer counted as income. So now Ray would be eligible for a full SSI check of $785. That's why it's considered an SSI work incentive, because a person becomes eligible for SSI by putting earned, unearned income, deemed income, in-kind income, or resources into a plan for achieving self-support. It is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful program. Then the fourth way that a PASS can help an individual is by helping them to become Medicaid eligible or keeping Medicaid eligibility for them. And the way that works, of course, is that if the person was getting no SSI, typically, and they were not working, so they're not eligible for the Medicaid buy-in program for working people with disabilities, if they were getting no SSI, they'd be getting no Medicaid. But if they have a PASS and they become eligible for even $1 of SSI, guess what? Ding! They qualify for Medicaid also. So it is truly a wonderful program that can help an individual in so many ways. Now, I just want to remind you that these are the rates for 2012 for the SSI program. If a person lives alone, they will get $785. And of course, if there's unearned income coming in, well, they reduce that $785. If there's earned income coming in, when they look at the countable earned income, they reduce that $785. If they live with others, we're talking about $721. That's the rate, because as you know, two can live cheaper than one. Economy of scales. So New York State provides a lower state supplement for individuals that live with others than they do for individuals that live alone. Finally, if the individual has income other than the SSI, part of that income, as I just told you, is subtracted from the base rate to determine the monthly SSI benefit. It's the way the budgeting works, and we're going to take you through, I promise you, a number of budgets that will help to crystallize this for you in a few minutes. If individuals would like to check out the SSI rates for certified residences, we've given you the citation right here, and we also sent it to you as a PDF with your slide materials. Now, let's look at an example of a person that needs a PASS. In this case, we're going to say it's Joan, and she needs a PASS, and this is very important. Let's look at the rule. Income or resources used in a PASS to support a work goal will not count. Remember, we keep saying that, will not count when determining SSI eligibility. Will not count. Now, let's look at the example. Joan. She happens to be a young woman with a developmental disability. She loves to work in the yard, and she's going to begin working at a garden store in July 2012. Recently, she has had neighbors ask her to landscape and keep up their yards. Her parents have encouraged her green thumb, and she would like to start a business. Now, she's talking to one of you, and you say, "What do you need for your business, Joan?" And Joan says, "I need $900 for basic landscape tools and $300 for gardening clothing and gardening shoes." And you say to her, "But who's going to keep the books for you? How will you keep track of what's coming in and what's going out?" And she says, "Well, my dad has told me that he will do the books for me for free." So that's an unincurred business expense. Someone is doing something for her for free. So Joan is going to be earning $385 per month working at the garden store. She proposes to set aside the $150 of her SSI check each month, okay, that would have been counted and that it would have been reduced by for 8 months to save for those items to meet her work goal. Now, let's look at the budget. You'll notice, step one, without a pass, right? Joan doesn't have a pass yet. So she's got no unearned income coming in, so we go to step two. Step two, it's gross earned income. $385 is her gross earned income. Remember the formula? 20, 65, half the remainder. We use the 20 with the earned income here because it's not been used before in any unearned income because there is no unearned income here. So when you take 20 away from 385, that leaves 365. You take 65 away, the formula, the earned income exclusion, that leaves $300. You divide it by 2 because it's 20, 65, and half the remainder that's excluded, and that leaves $150. Her total countable earned income here is $150. We went through these formulas last month, and we gave you a lot of examples with these formulas. And so when Joan earns $385 in a month, her countable earned income will be $150 because of the work incentive exclusions. Now we go to step three and we say, what's her countable unearned income? There was none, zero. And what's her countable earned income? In this case, it's $150. So $150 is her total countable income. Now you'll notice that it says minus money in a pass. But guess what? Nothing's in here now because as you see at the top of the slide, this is the calculation without a pass. So now you go to step four. Her base SSI rate, since she lives alone, is $785. She's got $150 in total countable income. So she will be getting a check of $635. Notice that? It went down by $150 when she earned $385 because that was her countable earned income. So she will be getting an SSI check of $635. Now she'll still have a lot more money coming in because you think about this. She's got $635 coming in SSI. Excuse me. Plus she's earned $385. So that's well over $1,000. But that's how the budget is done. Now let's take it one step further and let's look at the calculation with a pass. At this point, Joan says, I'm going to take that $150 and I'm going to put it in a pass. So let's see how it affects the budget. Step two is exactly the same way. You've got the earned income of $385. You go through the budgeting, you know, methodology, 20, 65, half the remainder. You take away 20, that's 365. You take away the $65 for earned income exclusion, that's 300. You divide it by 2, 150. She's got total countable earned income of 150 still. So there, in step three, you put in countable earned income, 150. But this time, she is putting that $150 in a pass. And that's a minus sign there. When you take 150, that's countable earned income, and you take that 150 and you put that money in a pass, it's a separate bank account, my friends, that's just for the pass monies. That you put money in and you take money out for expenses and you keep receipts. When you put that money into a pass, look at how much countable income is left. Zero. So now the base SSI rate is 785. Take away how much? Zero. She still gets a full SSI check. That's an extra $150 that's in a special account. She still has the same amount of money to live on that she had before. But lo and behold, she's got $150 in that bank that she uses to achieve her work goal. This is why Ray and I will keep saying to you that the Social Security Administration is giving free money to the individual to help them become self-sufficient. It's an incredibly powerful program. And if she was earning more money, she'd be able to put more money into the bank account. She'd be able to save faster, and she would still get her full SSI check. So she can actually increase her earnings down the road. And that may happen down the road in Joan's case. Now let's go on and look at what happens with the approved pass. And this is a way of making sure that everybody is with us up to this point. With the pass approval, SSI no longer counts her earned income, right? Because she's put that money into a pass. So her countable income has been reduced to zero. There it is. Sorry, right there, to zero. Under step four, countable income zero, because it's now in a pass. Her SSI check has increased to 785. Let me take you back. Without the pass, her SSI check, look at step four, bottom line, 635. With a pass, 785. That $150 increased because she put that money into a plan for achieving self-support. Her past savings are going to be $1,200. 8 months times 150, not 450. I apologize for that, and I will correct that. 8 months times 150 is $1,200. Her savings are going to pay for her landscape tools, for the gardening clothing, and for the shoes. Now, the pass is going to start in July 2012, and it's going to continue, a very short pass, through February 2013. But she can begin purchasing her tools the minute she's got some money in the pass. And it's going to continue purchasing those tools, the clothing, and the shoes during the life of the pass. And more importantly, she's still going to have that $785 SSI full check plus the $385 that she earns to live on. So she is going to be so much better off. Now, you may be saying, it sounds like a great program, but what are the criteria to make sure that a person, when they are going to be applying for a pass, can actually get a pass? What are the criteria? Well, let me just tell you. And Ray, was this your slide? Or is
this is my slide.
Ray, well, shut my mouth. It is your turn, my friend.
Okay. Now, as Ed mentioned, this is a Social Security program, and with Social Security comes lots of rules. So we're going to talk about the criteria, what is required to establish a pass. And while there are lots of rules, you got to understand that these are not onerous rules at all. They're actually pretty easy. Now, the plan has to be in writing, and it has to be created for you, for the individual who is going to work. So every plan is different and customized to the person who wants the plan. And there is a form, SSA 545. Now, that form is quite long, but it is doable, even if you do it in little pieces. And Ed's going to hopefully have time to share a few tricks with you at the end of our presentation today. But that form is the appropriate form to use. Now, what must that contain? It has to have a work goal. It's a plan to achieve self-support. So the end of the plan means you have a job. In Joan's case, she wants to be a garden landscaper. That's a specific goal. Now, is that job feasible? Is it a feasible work goal? Now, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but feasible basically means, can the individual perform that job given the medical involvement? Do they have what we would call residual functional capacity. Do they have the ability to do that job and make this plan a success? A savings and spending plan. Ed told you about the savings plan. We're taking some money, making it not count for SSI purposes, and we're saving that. But we also have to show Social Security how we're going to spend it. So attached to Joan's plan would be clothing, gardening shoes, and the various tools that she's going to need to bring to that job with her. A list of items and services needed. Now she needs all of those tools and all of those clothes and boots, but she also, as Ed mentioned, needs some bookkeeping help because this is going to be her own little business. So how's she going to keep track of all the paperwork? Well, Ed said her dad is going to do that free of charge. So that service needs to be noted, but it also needs to be noted that it's not going to cost her any money. Now, the timetable for achieving her goal, if we're looking at Joan's situation, it's 8 months. $150 for 8 months will give her enough money to buy what she needs. She'll probably have time to set herself up in some form of self-employment, some kind of business creation that she needs to do. But maybe where she wants to work at a garden center, she may need time to find a placement. So we might look at 8 months as the savings goal, a ninth month for a spending plan, and maybe a tenth month for placement. We can customize that to Joan's need. And the last thing here, the work goal must increase the prospect for self-support. You know, Ed said that we're going to continue to tell you that there's free money here being handed out. Well, it's free, yeah. But it's really a deal, and it's a bet. We are betting that if we cut Joan some slack and don't count that $150, that she'll be able to support herself and either need less benefits or no benefits at the end. So this is society saying, you go for it and you give it a shot. And we're going to take a chance that at the end you're going to be successful. So Ed, I think that brings us up to your next question.
Absolutely. And we're going to launch this one. And let's see how carefully everybody has been paying attention to what Ray just said. This question is a very simple question. Even a person unable to pursue an occupational goal is a good candidate for a pass. True or false? Even a person unable to pursue an occupational goal is a good candidate for a pass. And right now, we have got in 50% of the vote, and there's a split, but the split is, you know, more like almost 90-10. But there is a split. So this is good because this will give us a chance to make sure that we restate what we want people to take away. Right, Ray?
Absolutely.
So we've got another 12 seconds, and we've got 80% of you having voted. Let's get a few more voting, and then I will close the poll. Good, good. One more voting, and we'll be up to 90%, guys. Come on, one more person. Can we get one more person voting? Nicole, vote. Anyway, let me close that poll and let me share the results. 82% of you said absolutely false. A person who's unable to pursue an occupational goal is not a good candidate for a pass. I'm sorry. And 18% of you said, yep, even a person unable to pursue an occupational goal is a good candidate for a pass. And Ray, what do you say and why?
You know, I'm going to go with the audience because on that last slide we talked about the goal being feasible. And that relates directly to the person's ability to do the job that they're setting out to do. Now, if Ray were to say to Ed, Ed, I want to be an accountant, Ed would say, Ray, you can't count. It's not feasible that
But Ray, you can be a lawyer because you're such a Philadelphia lawyer. You can argue any point.
I know. You know. I mean, if I could have done anything else, I wouldn't have had to go to law school. But you know, but that would make it not feasible. If I have no number sense, and I can assure you I have no number sense, accounting's not the way to go.
That's right, Ray.
So we have to make sure that's feasible. We're going to talk about that, you know, a little bit later in the next couple of slides to determine what feasible actually means.
Absolutely, Ray. But more importantly, I want to remind everybody, if there is no specific work goal, the person who's reviewing the pass at the Social Security Administration in New York City, there are two, Bob and Ada Lisa, and then upstate there is one, Leslie Thompson. Let me just tell you, they will not approve the pass without a specific work goal. You must have a work goal or it will not be approved.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Okay, we're talking about increasing somebody's prospect for self-support. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that I'm going to earn $100 a month and that's going to reduce my benefits? Well, no, there are some specific policies here. Now, we are looking at creating in sometimes or somebody who's eligible for SSI, right? So we're looking at two different forms of benefits, as Ed pointed out, that might be impacted. And we've got a different criteria for each benefit. Now, if you look at that first one, if you're on SSI and the pass is approved, so Joan's pass is approved and she is going to become a garden landscaper, she has to show Social Security that when that pass is complete, her SSI is going to be significantly reduced. Now, if she only receives SSDI before the pass was created and the SSI was the result of creating the pass, then she needs to show Social Security that her SSDI check will be eliminated, which means this year in 2012, she'll be earning at least $1,010 a month in countable income. Now, Joan's goal is self-employment, a garden landscaper. She's hoping to earn $885. You know, and Ed puts these numbers in here so I can actually count. Now, would she meet the criteria? You know, Joan doesn't receive SSDI, so who cares, right? That's a requirement we don't care about. But look at the SSI. She receives $785. Would earnings of $885 significantly reduce her SSI payment? Well, when we do the math, if we subtract 20, subtract 65, and divide by 2, we come up with $400 in countable income. So $400 is more than 50% of her SSI. Her SSI will be reduced by more than half, and I think that's going to be a significant reduction for Social Security to consider.
I agree completely. In fact, I will tell you right now that if any one of you were to call the hotline and speak to Jessica Abbott, and you said to Jessica, I've got a person on SSI, and the goal is to earn $885 at the end of the pass, Jessica would say to you, that's a reduction of $400 that she'll be getting in SSI. Absolutely, that is going to increase her prospect of becoming self-supporting because it is actually significantly reducing her SSI payment amount.
Absolutely. All right, so we're up to polling question 3, Ed.
Absolutely. And then, Ray, after the polling question, I'm going to ask you a question that's also just popped up.
But
let's do the polling question first. Okay. The polling question, again, this is one that's right on target here, my friends. A pass must increase the prospect for self-support. True or false? And Ray, if somebody gets this one wrong this time, we're going to do what my friend Connie Farrell says she will do to people if they don't understand what to her is a simple concept. She says that she's going to snatch them bald-headed. And she's so funny about it. But basically, this is one to make sure that we have an understanding of a very basic principle. That's what this polling question is about. And so if anybody gets it wrong, we will cover it real quickly again and then move on. And we have 45 seconds. We've got almost 90% of the vote in with a 94-6% split, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
This is a very good sign here. And with 1 minute left and 90% of the vote in, I'm going to close the poll and I'm going to share the results. 94% of you said absolutely. A pass must increase the prospect for self-support. And 6% of you said, no, it doesn't really have to. And Ray, I'm just going to point out have people look at the title of the slide. Will pass increase the prospect for self-support? If it doesn't, it's not going to get approved. For an SSI person, it must significantly reduce the SSI payment amount. In this case, it does, because Joan's goal is to earn $885 a month once the pass is completed, so that her SSI will be reduced by about $400.
Yep.
So yes, that's a significant reduction.
Yep. So, and that's the whole reason why we're giving people free money, to reduce those benefits.
Because it's called the plan for achieving self-support, so that it's increasing their prospect for becoming self-supporting. Right, Ray?
Right. And somebody out there is going to be snapped bald-headed.
That's right. That's right. So here's the question that just came in from Minakashi Bouvain, and it says, with respect to the criteria for a pass, could we please elaborate about how a training period or college course is evaluated in terms of increasing the work prospect for self-support, especially in the present job market?
Well, that's an excellent question, first of all. And the basic thing that Social Security is looking at, again, is the prospect for self-support. Now, do you need a degree or college education or vocational training to achieve your goal? In Joan's instance, she doesn't really need any of that training. You know, she's got that green thumb. She's been self-taught. She loves to garden. So she can turn her passion into a job. But let's say, as Ed mentioned, I want to become a teaching assistant, and I have a high school diploma. Well, if my goal is feasible and I need a 2-year community college degree in order to become a teaching assistant, then Social Security will allow me to do that if my goal is feasible. Do I show the ability that I can do that job? If that's the case, then the training that's necessary will be provided through the PASS plan. Now, the last part of your question is even more interesting. You said, in this economy. Now, we know it's a tough economy, and we know that people are finding a tough time finding jobs. But that doesn't matter for the PASS. The question is, do you have a goal? Is it feasible? I have a goal. I want to be a teaching assistant. I need a 2-year degree to do that, and I can do that job. So what we will do is put the plan together, and we will hope that in 2 years, when I have my associate's degree, the job market will have improved.
Absolutely, Ray. And remember, that's what the goal is, okay? the idea then, is it a specific work goal and is it feasible? And if the Social Security worker says it's feasible, well then what would you be expected to earn when you complete the PASS plan? You know, there's no assumption that people will not be able to get a job. I know the economy is bad, but the assumption is that once a person gets educated, people always can get jobs. Yeah. And so it may be a tough job market, but they're not going to be penalized because of the tough job market. It's right. A great question. It's a great question. Now, Joan has a question, which is another excellent question. She says that she works with a young lady who was receiving SSI benefits and now receives only SSD. And I'm suspecting, Ray, that one of two things happened here. Either the young lady became eligible to SSD on her own earnings record, mm-hmm. or she became eligible as a disabled adult child when a parent died, retired, or became disabled, and she was able to show that her disability began prior to age 22. And we covered this last month in our session. And what Joan is wondering is, will she be eligible for the work incentive program that we've been talking about now, including a pass, when she's getting SSDI benefits that are either DAC benefits or benefits on her own?
Well, the answer is, you know, it depends. You know, my favorite legal answer, it depends. We'd have to look at all of the numbers. Yeah, because the idea of taking the Title II, the DAC, or your own insurance benefits and putting them into a pass is perfectly acceptable. But let's take Ed. Now, Ed has been working for a long time and been making some good money. And let's say his benefit is $2,000 a month. If Ed takes $2,000 a month and puts it into a pass, he will be SSI eligible. But the question then becomes is, can he show Social Security that he can meet his basic needs with $785 in SSI? So the higher those Title II benefits are, it's the more explaining you have to do. But it's most certainly possible, and I'm not going to tell somebody, don't think about it. I'm going to tell you to sit down, call that hotline, and have somebody run the numbers with you.
Absolutely, Ray. But I will tell you that if the numbers are within that SSI range, between like $800 and $900, $800 and even $1,000, there's a very good chance that they could utilize, of course, the plan for achieving Social Support.
Oh, yeah.
Because in some places, they'll actually even be paying for Medicaid with a spend down. And if they become SSI eligible because of a pass, there goes the Medicaid spend down.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. So there are lots of financial considerations here.
Absolutely. So we encourage you to call that hotline if you've got a question like that. And Joan, that was a great question.
Okay. And one other thing that came up, and I just want to mention it now to soothe the audience, and you can take it up again at the end of the presentation, is what happens if this fails? The economy is bad. I get my associate's degree, and I am unable to find a job. Do I have to give all that money back?
And the answer is absolutely not. If you used the monies in the plan for achieving self-support, my goodness, I'm getting like Nicole here. I can't get through the word pass. If you use the plan for achieving self-support to actually further that work goal and to try to become self-sufficient and you then can't get a job, then you're not going to be penalized for that at all. However, if you took the money that was in the past and instead of using it for your work goal, you took a trip to Aruba on vacation, now you would have to pay it back because you did not use it towards the work goal. So let me allay those concerns right now.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about that.
All right. Good job, Ed. All right. What work goals will Social Security approve? Again, it has to be specific. A teaching assistant, a garden landscape, a lawyer. Those are specific jobs. That's what we're looking at. Now, you have to have a reasonable chance of reaching the goal given the disabling medical conditions. That makes sense. That makes the goal feasible. And I want to skip down to the last bullet right now. If the individual is working with a rehabilitation professional, either from AccessVR, which is the new name for VESID, or with a private vocational rehabilitation professional, and that professional says, yes, the job goal is realistic, then Social Security will accept it. If I say, if Ray says, I want to be a teaching assistant and I can do that, then I have to explain to Social Security why I think I can do that. So you don't have to have a professional sign off on your goal, but it gets you over that part of the requirement much easier. Now, the goal has to be full-time or part-time, and as we said, eliminate or reduce your benefits depending on which benefit you received. And the goal could be, you know, maybe Joan isn't quite sure. A lot of people who are in Joan's situation don't know what their work capacity might be. So maybe Joan wants to start part-time. See how it goes, see what her stamina is, and then move to full-time. That's perfectly acceptable, too. So if you're not understanding yet, we're trying to let you know that this is an incredibly flexible tool, and it can bend and give while you're creating it and while it is occurring. So if we can go on to the next one, Ed. What money goes into that pass? Well, you got to tell Social Security. They need to know. Is it wages? You could be working and putting some of your earned income into that pass, like Joan. Is it income from a business? Is it unearned income? Is there a Title II check? As Ed just mentioned, that person with the disabled child benefit or benefit on their own record, or is there some other kind of benefit? A Veterans Administration pension, unemployment check, an annuity, any other source of income? Or are you using resources? You know, I just read a plan this morning where the individual had $9,000 in savings and was going to put $7,000 of that savings account into the PASS plan to fund the education. That's perfectly fine. A personal injury award. Is there a court settlement? Is there an inheritance? Or that lump sum, that first check for SSI or SSDI, that tends to be a lot of money for some people. But anything you can imagine that can support your vocational goal can be used to support the PASS. But we need to tell Social Security what it is and how you're going to hold it. Now, if it's putting money into a bank account, there's no magic to this. I am putting $150 a month into my PASS. It will be at the First National Bank in account 12345. That's all it is. There's nothing fancy about this at all.
That's right, Ray. And the Social Security worker will actually ask people to send them a copy of their PASS account so they can see the money that's going in, yeah, and to make sure that it's going in each and every month, and also to see the money that's going out. And if money is going out, they will ask for a receipt so that they, yep, make sure that it's being spent towards that occupational, towards that work goal. Now, Ray, I want to just mention one thing here, because everybody here knows that for SSI, there's a resource limit. And the resource limit is a whopping $2,000. If a person gets a personal injury award, it's typically going to be a lot higher than $2,000. If it were to be, let's say, $20,000, the person would have the money counted in the first month as income, and then in the months thereafter as a resource if there's any money left over. Well, it's not easy to spend $20,000 in a month. Well, maybe for me it is, but for most people, it's not easy to spend $20,000 in a month. And so the person would be well over the SSI resource limit, and they would not be entitled to a check in that month or any month thereafter when they had more than $2,000 in the bank. But if they had an occupational goal and they said, my goal is to become a lawyer, or in Ray's case, an accountant, because he wants to stretch himself, okay, at that point, he could put that money into a special account so that either to help pay for his education or to begin a business at the end of his education, and that money would not be counted as a resource during the life of the pass. And that's why this is such a great program.
Absolutely.
Such a great program.
Yeah, what better way to spend that $20,000 than getting me an associate's degree so I can become a teaching assistant?
Exactly.
It's a great thing. It's a great thing. Allowable expenses. Now, your plan, your individual plan is going to list the expenses and the costs of each item and when you're going to spend that money. But what is allowable? Anything that is reasonable and necessary to your professional goal. College or training costs, transportation, including buying or leasing a car, insurance, maintenance, and repairs. You got to keep it up. You're going to buy a car, you got to get the oil changed. A computer, software, the cost of internet. Work clothes, professional clothing. Anytime, you know, if Joan were going to become a construction worker, she'd need steel-toed boots. Business startup costs. You know, in Joan's case, we've got an individual whose dad's going to pitch in and do the books. If that service were not available, what we would have to do is build in some more money to pay for that bookkeeping service as the cost of starting up a business. Maybe there are papers that have to be filed at the town hall or the city hall to get herself self-employed. Dues, fees, licenses. Maybe she's going to join the County Garden Landscapers Association. Yeah, and there's a fee for that. That's important. And why is that important? That's important because she's going to be able to use that to network with people, let people know she's in the business. And if there are kids, child care. You can't have little kids running around the house on their own. Someone's got to take care of them. And that child care is certainly reasonably tied to a work goal. You got to make the picture complete. So that's just the beginning of the list. After that, when we sit down to develop your plan, we use our imaginations and determine everything you believe you might need to get to that goal.
Absolutely, Ray. That's why I put in the words anything reasonably tied to the work goal. Let me give you an example real quickly of my first plan for achieving self-support. I helped a young man with a bad back condition become a chiropractor, and he had just gotten an inheritance of $165,000 from his grandma, who had died. And so he put that $165,000 into the plan for achieving self-support, thereby remaining SSI eligible, and to use when he completed his education to buy a small building, to have it modified so that it was handicap accessible both for himself and for his clients. And it was approved by Social Security. He completed his pass, he bought the building, he started the business, and he has been off SSDI and SSI now for over 20 years. A successful pass. Anything reasonably tied to the work goal.
All right, Ed, we've got a question regarding transportation. And transportation's always a good one. Notice we said transportation, including vehicle lease or purchase. Now, if I am a wheelchair user and I need an accessible van, that is perfectly permissible. And if I am unable to drive that van and need to pay somebody, I am going to hire my neighbor, Eddie, to drive me to and from work. That's okay too. And those services can be built into the pass. Now, when we talk about vehicle lease or purchase, a van that is accessible is a very expensive item. So what would we do? We'd probably buy the van. We'd ask Access VR to make it accessible. But Ed, what would happen if I said, I need a car. I'm going to be a teaching assistant, and it's 4 miles to the closest school, and I've decided that that little BMW is the car for me.
Well, let me tell you, my friend Leslie Thompson, who is the PASS specialist that handles the upstate region, would tell you that why would you get a BMW when a Ford would do? And so she would not approve the purchase of a BMW, but she would approve the purchase of a Ford. But let me just tell you, to follow up on what Ray said, when a person cannot use a car without modification, Access VR will pay for the modifications, but they will not pay for the van.
Right.
And so one can use the pass to pay for the van, and then Access VR will pay for the modifications. So what you're doing there basically is using funds from more than one source together to be able to buy what you need to buy to achieve that work goal.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's why a pass is so important. And if a person has a note from Access VR that says, I think this work goal is feasible, and in fact, if Ray Sabula can save up enough money with the pass to buy the van, we will modify it because we know that will help him become self-sufficient in the future, they will approve the pass at Social Security. Simple as that. Okay, Ray, I'm going to move you right along here.
All right. Now, time limits. How long can this take? Now, we talked about Joan's pass, 8 months to save. Is she going to need time to gather all of that equipment once it's saved, or is she going to buy as she goes along? Is she going to need time for placement, time to set that business up? Well, the pass can be approved for whatever period she needs. Now, usually Social Security will approve a pass for 18 months initially. But when you look at Ray's pass, I've got 2 years of schooling. So how can I possibly finish 2 years of school in 18 months? Well, the 18 months is just a way to allow Social Security to check. And if the income is still going into the pass, and what I'm spending is in accordance with the spending plan, Social Security will continue. You know, they'll just allow that to happen. You know, and the time limit can change. You know, as I said, these are very, very flexible things. What is there anything else Joan needs? Well, she found out that along with the tools that she thought she needed, some of her jobs are a little bigger, and that shovel just isn't enough. You know, she needs a small rototiller. That's new equipment. Is it reasonable? Sure, because I have a big backyard, and I just hired her to landscape my whole backyard. It's certainly reasonable. So what she decides to do is extend that plan for 3 months so she can spend $450 on that rototiller. It's reasonable. It helps her meet her goal. And if she's getting big jobs like that, it's likely to make her even more self-sufficient than she was planning on being. So question for Ed. Here we go.
Okay, Ramon, and this is going to be a question that focuses on what you know already. And here's the first question. Based on what you've heard so far, an individual cannot amend the pass, true or false. In other words, once you've got it, the pass is rigid.
God, we got people answering before you even read it.
I'll tell you, people, I think people are getting to know what you and I are like. and so they've got it all figured out with us. Well, this is very good. We've already
Ed,
got
stop it. Over stop it now.
80% of the votes.
95, stop it.
Okay, I am going to keep my mouth shut.
Yes.
I feel like Schultz. I say nothing. I hear nothing. I see nothing. I do nothing.
All right, close it, Ed. Please. All right.
Ray says close it. We had over 90% of the vote in, and look at the results. 100% of you said absolutely false. Of course an individual can amend the pass, and 100% of you are absolutely correct.
Absolutely right.
That is great.
Good
All right.
job. Good job.
So let us move on. Ray, let's talk about the amendments.
All right. How do you amend this? You know, amending is very easy. Amending is very easy. Ed, we need the slide up there.
Oh, sorry about that. Forgot to hide the results.
That's okay. You did. You forgot to hide the results. I know we were excited about those results, but you can put them away now.
Hey, anytime we get 100%, I am psyched.
All right. The amendments can be made as often as you need to. And it's fairly easy. What do we need to do? Can Joan just say, oh, I need a rototiller, so I'm going to extend my pass for 3 months? Or rather than buy something that I said I was going to buy, I'm going to use that money for a rototiller? Well, no, she can't just do it. She has to work with the pass specialist. She needs to add something that she didn't think she was going to need, the rototiller. Are there personal changes? What about my pass? I go to school. I'm expecting to go to school for 2 years full time. But I realize through the first semester that my stamina is not going to allow me to take a full course load. So rather than 2 years to get that assistant teaching credential, it's going to take me 2.5 years. That's something I need to tell Social Security because I need more time for that education. You know, there aren't many. That example there, it's going to take people 5 years rather than 4 years to complete a college program. Do you know that the statistics today show that it takes the majority of students who are in four-year degree programs at least 5 years to finish them? The people are not going to school 4 times. And most certainly when you add in the notion that somebody has a disability, it's only reasonable that it might take longer. So we can expand it.
That's right, Ray. And in fact, Ray, the Social Security pass specialists fully understand that. And in New York, they are really good about amending. But they want to know ahead of time. What they don't want to get is a letter from someone that says, oh, by the way, I've just found out that I am flunking 2 of my classes, and it's going to take me longer. They want to know, were you not doing well early on? So, might you want to take less courses so that you don't flunk a class?
Yeah, there's
they'll work with you.
Yeah, that's the good thing about the PASS specialists and Social Security when it comes to PASS plans. They do not want these to fail. They truly will work with folks to make people successful.
Next right. slide here, my friend.
One more, yeah. Now, Joan, we talked about what she's going to do. You know, 5 months into her pass, she realizes she's going to have $600 of additional expenses. There's that $400 rototiller, and lo and behold, her father says, this is going really well, and if we buy this computer software program, I'm going to be able to set your business up in prime fashion, and that program costs $200. So if she lets Social Security know that she needs that rototiller, her plan becomes a 12-month plan rather than an 8-month plan. She's now got $1,800, and during that extra 4 months, the income still doesn't count, and she gets a full SSI check of $785. And it's absolutely just that easy. My guess is in New York, that type of amendment might be completed via an email exchange with the PASS specialist.
But absolutely.
And the thing is, it doesn't matter how the amendment gets completed. The important thing is that you ask the PASS specialist to amend the plan. You have to work with the PASS specialist. You can't change it on your own and not tell anyone.
That's great, Ray. What a great point you've just made there. In where we are now in Rochester, and where I am in Rochester, I told you the PASS specialist is Leslie Thompson. And with Leslie, if you call her up on a PASS like this and you say, I'm going to need 4 more months because I've got to buy a rototiller and some computer software, Leslie will say, send me a quick note about that with an estimate of the cost for each and what you want. As soon as she gets it, Leslie will send out a note within 3 days that says, basically, you asked for this, and I've amended your pass. Mm-hmm. It will now end on such and such a date, and you will now be saving X amount and Y amount. Simple as that. Real quick. Nothing more, so that you don't have to go through, like, you know, jumping hoops, etc. Because the idea is Leslie understands that it takes a lot of time to start a business. She understands that if people are in school, they've got to work, and so she doesn't want to burden people with that. Bob Herbert and Ada Lisa are the same way. Yep. In New York City. In fact, I've got to tell you that Ada Lisa was at a past session that Ray and I did in New York City, and she and Bob got up and explained that there was a woman who had gone through a pass, who was going to be looking for a job, and she had some money left over in the pass, and she contacted the pass specialist, and she asked them, number one, can I get a manicure, can I get a facial, and can I get a haircut on the pass? Can I also get a pedicure, because it was the summer, and buy myself some sandals? And they approved it. And Bob was especially fond of letting us know that when she applied for that job and she went to that interview with the facial, with the manicure, with the pedicure, and the new sandals, she got the job. So it was money well spent. So flexibility here, my friends, is the key. Flexibility here is the key. And we've got one more question here, right?
Okay.
The question is, if you put the money into your PASS account, do you have to show that you have spent all the money in your PASS account down and spent it on exactly the things you said you would spend it on? Yes.
Yes, yeah. Unless you go through the amendment process, yes. If I were to say I was going to buy a Ford Focus and showed up at Social Security for my review in a BMW, I've got some explaining to do.
You do, because you know you will not have been able to pay for the whole BMW. So now you basically put a down payment on the BMW, yep, which is very different than the whole thing you're supposed to, yep, do. And they will be look askance at that. Yes, but look, but if you are going to deviate, as long as you let the worker know about it, they're going to approve it because it's a very flexible plan. And now let me cover the last two issues very quickly here. First, suspending a pass. When you've got an individual with a disability, sometimes just life happens. And if you've got someone who's HIV positive, or if you've got someone who's got multiple sclerosis, you know that those are conditions that ebb and flow. They're roller coaster conditions. Fibromyalgia, same way. And so sometimes you have to put a pass on hold, and that's called suspending a pass, okay? So we can put a pass on suspension status when a person says, I just can't do it right now. And what Social Security will say to the person is, wait a minute, you can't do it right now, but you might be able to do it. You're overwhelmed today, but you might be able to do it in 2 or 3 months. So I'm going to suspend it for the time being. Or if the conditions of the plan are not being followed because there's too much pressure on the individual, they should have been taking less courses, etc., they'll say, let's put it on hold, suspend it, and let's talk about how you could actually succeed. Or, of course, they might suspend it once the goal is achieved, especially if they're saying, but we might need to unsuspend it down the road to buy a few things before the end. So that's how it happens. Suspension occurs in the following manner. They'll say, we're not going to terminate the pass because this is not a disability determination. So we can suspend it for up to 12 months and unsuspend it for up to 12 months. But once you go past that 12 months, then there's going to be a termination. And that's the next slide, termination of the pass. The pass is ended if, well, SSA approves a new pass application. The person says, you know what, I have totally changed my work goal. I was in school, and I fully understand that that's what I thought I was going to do, race case, as an accountant. He realized he wasn't as good at math. It now turns into becoming a lawyer. And so they say, well, because a pass can only have one occupational goal, and now you've changed it, you've got to put in a new application. So what Social Security will do is they won't say, let me terminate your pass and you're out of luck. What they'll say is they're going to continue the pass until you've got the new pass application in and until it's approved. And then they terminate the prior pass. Or if eligibility for SSI is terminated, remember what I told you at the beginning. This is like bookends here of today's webinar. I said to you that a pass is an SSI work incentive. And if for some reason it is terminated, and often the reason it gets terminated is because somebody doesn't understand what you can do with monies. And so they'll get an inheritance from an individual, or they'll get a personal injury award, or they'll get a big check, and they won't say, gee, let me put it into the pass in order to make sure that I complete the pass quicker, or that I can do something that's even more likely to make me self-sufficient down the road. And that's when it gets terminated, because they lose their SSI benefit because of receipt of unearned income or a huge resource. Or, of course, if they have not unsuspended the pass in 12 months, because as I said to you, it's got to be a 12 months or less for it to be unsuspended. After the 12 months, it is an automatic termination. Automatic termination. Now let me talk to you about help with a pass. And in fact, it's 11:18, which is great, so I'm going to be able to show you our pass online. But you'll notice that I say, for help with a pass, what can you do? I'm going to cover the second bullet first, because Nicole covered it for you before. You can contact the toll-free line. The number is there, 1-888-224-3272. And if you have any questions, talk to one of the folks there. I guarantee you that they will send you to Jessica Abbott at Neighborhood Legal Services when you say pass, and she will be able to answer just about any question you have about a pass. You can also go to Pass Online. Okay, it's a website that was created by me and the web team at Cornell, and I find it to be a great resource. PassOnline.org. The reason being that it helps you learn about the PASS program. It helps you draft the PASS a little at a time, save the partially completed application, and go back to it as needed. Once you complete the application, you can print it as a PDF. You can even give someone permission to go to your PASS online and to help you review it, and it makes it so much easier. And I'm going to, at this point, press the escape button for a minute, and I'm going to take you to Pass Online. And there you have it, and I hope everybody here can see Pass Online. You'll notice that it says, welcome to Pass Online, and you have tabs about Pass. And to have talking to you about all these issues. For example, there's a section on how does a pass work? What's the impact of a pass? Who are good pass candidates? Who are not good pass candidates? What should you be thinking about when you're first considering a pass? What's this occupational goal issue all about? What's starting a business mean? How do you know you've got a viable plan? What's the life of a pass? And what are the responsibilities that I have when I've got a pass? And so you can click on any of those and you will be able to go to that page. But there's also another tab, as you see here, called Pass Application. And when you get to Pass Application, if you're new, you've got to create an account. And in this case, I've already got an account, and of course, I'm Lopez. And I've got a password, which I can't give you. But once I go on, up pops up the Pass Application itself. And what I've got is a separate page for each set of questions. And what I've done with this form and this website is that I want to make it as easy as possible for an individual who is considering drafting and then presenting a pass to Social Security. So for every question, I also have sample answers and tips. So the first question is, what is your work goal? Here's some sample answers. To own and operate my own retail record shop, the I still prefer records shop. Or to work as a lighting person at a theater. To open up my own bakery shop. To become an occupational therapy assistant. To get a VR evaluation, because as we said before, you can have a pass just to get a VR evaluation to ascertain what an individual might be best at. Or to continue working 40 hours a week as a customer support clerk and reduce my need for job coaching services. So you'll see a lot of examples there, and I do that for each and every question. I also give you tips for each question. For example, look at the tip for this one. What is your work goal? Describe the job expected at the end of the plan. If you're employed by other, give job title or duties. If you're self-employed, give the name of the business and position in the business. If you're asking for a VR evaluation, write VR evaluation only if the goal is specifically for career planning and your VR office is evaluating you. See how it works? So I've got tips for each and every question. So every question is there. You can then, once you're done with a question, and if a person is getting tired, they don't have to continue it. They can actually log out, and it will ask them if they want to save it. And they can save it. At the end, they can view it, as you can see, as a PDF. So they can view the whole document as a PDF. And once they're finished with it, they can actually, the individual can actually print it as a PDF, sign it, and send it to Social Security, to the pass specialist. I have had some people actually working with the Social Security workers. And they give them the information. And the Social Security worker will be reviewing the pass application as it is being done. And by the time that the application is completed, the Social Security worker is actually ready and able to send out an approval notice almost right away. So it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. Then there's a pass assistance. And you'll notice, person assistance with pass submission information. You can give a person that information, and lo and behold, the registered email, and they can access your pass. Wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. And then, resources. We have got the listings that will link you to the different websites that are very helpful. If a person goes to work, it's very important to know who the work incentive liaison is at their local office, because that's whom they're going to be submitting wage stubs to. It's going to be very important for them to know who the area work incentive coordinator is. You can find them on these websites. You want to know who the pass specialists are? There's the link for the pass cadre, pass specialists. You want to know whether there's someone out there that can help you think about work incentives and what it means to go to work and how it's going to impact all your benefits, why they're considered the work incentive planning advisors. And lo and behold, you can find them, and there's a link to them there. You want to know where your state VR offices are? There's a link to them there. You've got a problem with issues with respect to barriers to work? You can actually go to a protection and advocacy, and there's a link there that you, where you can find exactly the kind of place you want. So this website is really helpful. I would encourage each and every person here on this webinar today to go to passonline.org to play around with it. See what they see it's good. If they have any suggestions for me, send them to me, of course. But most importantly, what I want you to do is to use it, and then if you've got questions, contact the hotline because they will be able to help you. Now, with respect to that, let me just go back to the window and the. Oh, here we go, taking you back. I want to end the session by reminding everyone of the website passonline.org and the toll-free hotline 1-888-224-3272. I also want to say what Nicole said at the beginning. Plan for Achieving Self-Support is a wonderful program. A lot of people don't know about it. If everybody who is on this webinar today went back and told one, two, or three individuals that they know might be able to use a pass about it, we would have a lot more individuals using passes around the country. I've got to tell you that New York State had the second highest number of passes in all the country last year, which is absolutely just great, absolutely great. And we hope to be number one in a couple of years after that. Having said all that, I want to thank Nicole for the introduction and for creating this program. I want to thank my co-presenter, Ray Sabula, who luckily decided to become a lawyer instead of an accountant and is able to join me on these and does a great job with me on these. And I want to thank each and every one of you on today's webinar for hanging in there, for paying so much attention and asking some great questions. This webinar is going to be archived, and it will be up on the website, on the OPWDD website, in about, so let people know about it. Folks, take care and have a great day.